Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. A few weeks ago, we did a show on carbon credits and how conservation land and forested landscapes can be used in expanding carbon markets. It became clear in that show that some people had questions or misconceptions about a state program called current use. It's not the first time we've noticed that people are confused or curious about how that program works. It's been around and in use for about 40 years now, and a huge chunk of Vermont's working landscape is enrolled in the program, so it's worth having a refresher. Current use was designed as a way to help encourage landowners to maintain their property as a working landscape, like a farm, a forest landscape that's actively managed, or conserved land that doesn't get turned into multiple subdivisions. And the way the state decided to help landowners preserve their land in these ways was to tax it at a much lower rate, basically to tax it at its use value, not its property value. Measured by the objectives of its creators, it's been a hugely successful conservation program. But others question how this decrease in property taxes is affecting the state. Today, we're going to get our explainer course from the Tax Department's Current Use Program Chief, Elizabeth Hunt, and the Commissioner of Forest Parks and Recreation, Michael Snyder. Welcome to both of you. It's nice to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jane.
So, Elizabeth Hunt, can you start first by explaining to us a little bit more about what the need was that current use was designed to address?
So, when current use was formed, it was designed to provide both a tax savings to people who chose to be enrolled in the program, so that instead of being taxed at what the towns would assess your land at, it got taxed at what the use value is. And sometimes current use is known as the use value assessment program instead of the current use program.
And current use actually comes from that idea of what the current use of the landscape is, rather than, you know, that's that phrase, current use, because that's often confusing too.
Right. And it's the exact same program. And when current use first started, there were a number of different programs. There was a program called WIFTAP, which was the Working Farms Tax Abatement Program, and there are a number of other programs, and the legislature simplified those a number of years ago, so now we just have the current use program, which deals both with the working lands in agricultural enrollment and the forest lands, and then there's a small subcategory of conservation land that's designed for land conservation organizations.
And so the idea when it was created was to what? Help preserve the working landscape in Vermont? Was there a fear 40 years ago that, you know, these were all going to be turned into housing units and we'd become more sort of suburban?
Yeah, I think that was part of it. I wasn't around when that happened. But it was both to do that and to slow the development rate. It doesn't totally prevent development because you can come out of the current use program. And the statute talks about that. And it also talks about a more equitable taxation for the undeveloped lands.
So, Commissioner Snyder, how much land is now enrolled in current use? I know, Elizabeth Hunt, you can do this too, but you know, it's a lot of land.
It sure is. I'm more familiar with the forest land category. That's our responsibility. So just about 2 million acres of forest land enrolled, and if you add in agriculture and the conservation program, just under 2.5 million acres, 2,479,000 and change acres enrolled in the program currently.
And I think we were calculating that's something like 40% of Vermont's landscape, right? I mean, this is a large chunk of Vermont's land that's enrolled in this program.
Indeed. And as I understand it, approaching half of all eligible forest land parcels are now enrolled.
So it could be even higher if everybody who was eligible wanted to or chose to enroll in the program.
That's right.
Huh. So from your perspective, as the Commissioner of Forest Parks and Recreation, is this a success?
Yes. It's among the most successful conservation programs ever. I think we owe a lot to those who conceived of this and for the mix of reasons that you've discussed with Elizabeth for creating it, tax equity, a reality check on, you know, the current use of the property and a reflection of the importance of those current uses of agriculture and forestry to the benefits that they provide to the state and orderly development. And there's a key phrase in the statute that refers to the natural systems that are protected under these kinds of land uses. So I think it was prescient, and I think we can look back and say it's, you know, warts and all, it's been an incredibly successful program for keeping forest land and productive agricultural lands in use.
What are the warts?
Well, it's in fairness, it's over several decades now. It's kind of been there have been many changes and fits and starts at changes. To me, just speaking candidly, the warts there are it's not been a coherent or comprehensive overall approach. It's been a little duct tape here and some baling wire there, and you know we've kind of cobbed together changes, and that's something I am taking responsibility for in our department with the administration of the forest land category is to try to. Simplify it and streamline it and really focus on outcomes on the landscape with landowners as opposed to what I call administrivia.
Administrivia. So like what? I mean, give us an example here of a concrete way that plays out.
Well, for the forest land side, remember, there are some significant strings attached. When a landowner enrolls, it's a voluntary enrollment. This is not a regulatory program, though we administer it seriously. But people choose to enroll. Admittedly, some people don't have much of a choice given the property tax burdens that they feel compelled to enroll. But once they enroll in the forest land category, you have to have a forest management plan to state standards. The county foresters who work for us have to do inspections periodically to ensure compliance. Those are great educational opportunities too for folks. But you have to file a forest management activity report when there's activity to report. So there's – and all of those things come with administrative burdens that are easy to kind of get out of control. So that's the sorts of things we're talking about is the basic administration, and we're striving for more consistency, uniformity, predictability, and simplicity by, for example, creating a forest management plan template that just makes clear to all enrollees, consulting foresters who are really important to this program and working with landowners, and the county foresters who oversee it, that there's everyone's working from the same sheet of music, if you will, and have the same requirements and have consistency and predictability again. That's really important for landowners.
Yeah, and I want to talk about some of the other categories because agricultural land is a little bit different, you know, farmland. Right. But specifically looking at some of the nuts and bolts of how forest land is both eligible and then how it gets accepted into the program and is managed. I want to talk about that because it's really interesting. And so before we talk about farmland, Commissioner Snyder, this question of having your forest land enrolled in current use, you have to actively manage it and you have to have a management plan. And we interviewed Don Mitchell, who wrote a book about creating a habitat for bats and putting that into current use a few years ago. And it was a really involved process. I mean, you have to have somebody not only walk your property, you have to have an active management plan. It can take a lot of steps to say, this is what I'm doing and this is why I feel like my land should be enrolled in current use.
Right. And that, there's good reasons for that. Let's see. There's this requirement to be eligible. You have to have 25 contiguous acres of forest land, and you have to agree, as you suggest, to be actively engaged in management. That's one of the fundamental principles of the program. So, but rather than actively managing for repeated forest or timber crops, as it says in the statute, just willy-nilly, you do it according to a plan. A forest management plan is really simple. They can be very involved, but the basic concept is you describe the land and how it's comprised and the kind of ecological capabilities of the land. Then there's a statement of the landowner's objectives, and that varies among landowners. You get to choose what level of activity and what are you interested in. And then the third element of any plan is a list of activities, a schedule of treatments or prescriptions, silvicultural prescriptions we call them, which is an attempt to actively marry those two things, the land, its capabilities, and your interests as a landowner. You put that in a plan that spells out what we're going to do to enhance habitat while producing firewood or saw timber or whatever it is in a way that kind of holds it all together, protects water quality, and is a responsible approach to forest stewardship. You put that all in a written plan. We try to be very clear about the written standards for what goes into a plan and how you achieve a successful plan. And the county forester reviews all that and signs it as approved, and you're enrolled in the program. You don't have to actively manage every acre every year. It depends on the land. And some forest stands, for example, are younger and in a stage of development where there's really no activity indicated, and that's just fine. You put that in your plan. Other places where it's pretty clear that you could be thinning or regenerating or making other changes, and you indicate how you're going to do that. And for some, it's an activity that happens on a portion of the land or even all of the land. say this year, and then you don't really need to do anything for another 15 or 20 years. So it's, I just want to make clear that there is a requirement to be active in good stewardship and active management according to silvicultural principles. We have a lot of guidance for that, but it doesn't require that you do it every year on every acre.
We got a note from Brad who says, current use is a great program. Without it, our family's farm would have been sold off a long time ago. Because of it, we've been able to keep over 200 continuous acres in the family undeveloped and as one piece. The benefit to the public is that it keeps Vermont scenic, farmland stays in agriculture, and mountainsides remain wooded. So, Elizabeth Hunt, let's talk a little bit about those specifics, because that's a great introduction to especially how forest land is managed under current use. But can we back up a little bit first and say, you know, how does one become eligible, regardless of the type of land? Are there acreage, limitations or I guess minimums that you have to have? Like, you can't put your 2-acre parcel into current use if it's just attached to your house, right?
Yeah. So, and Commissioner Snyder touched on this a little bit. So you need to have, for forest land enrollment, you have to have 25 acres of forest land that can be managed. And you may have a house on there. If you have a house on either forest or agricultural land, you have to have 2 acres excluded or out of the program, not enrolled. And that's for each house site. So we see a lot of parcels that have 25 acres and then a 2-acre house site on them. And that's sort of the start of a forest program. And then they can go up to very large parcels, particularly up in the kingdom. We see large parcels.
What about for agriculture?
So for agricultural, it's slightly different. You could have a 25-acre parcel, but if you have less than 25 acres, you can qualify with certain income criteria around it. So if the parcel is owned by someone who's what we call a qualified farmer, someone who earns 50% of their gross income from the business of farming, we would look at their federal income tax returns to determine that. So a farmer could enroll small parcels. They may have one very large parcel and then have smaller parcels that they own around it, and those could be enrolled. You could also, if you're a landowner and you're not a qualified farmer, if you have a written lease of at least 3 years with someone who is a qualified farmer, that could be enrolled in the program. And that's very valuable to the farmers because then they can, have hay on adjoining parcels. Maybe they don't need to own it, but they can lease it. And we still have a working landscape. And then the final criteria for those smaller agricultural parcels is if the land earns $2,000 from the sale of farm crops, then that can also be enrolled in the program. But most of what we see are those larger parcels that are greater than 25 acres, in which case we're not looking at the income requirements around agricultural land.
So the land could be fallow, but it would still be allowed in current use.
Well, it has to be an active agricultural use, so it can't simply be fallow. It does have to be part of a working landscape. But if it's more than 25 acres, then we're not looking in detail at those income issues.
Ah. And what about the conserved land? Because that's a slightly different thing again.
Yeah. So conserved land is designed. It's got specific criteria that it needs to be owned by an organization that's in the business of land preservation, and they have to be a 501c3. And that's dealt with as a subset of the forest land category. So instead of developing a forest management plan that was talked about earlier, they develop a conservation management plan. And that's also reviewed and approved by the Department of Forest, Parks, and Recreation, and then that also has a regular inspection program.
So once you have been accepted in, what do you have to do to stay in?
So with the forest land, there's the county forester goes out and inspects the land every 10 years and makes sure that it's in compliance with the forest management plan. You have to update your forest management plan every 10 years and have that update approved. If you have agricultural land, there's a newer requirement around agricultural land. Actually, it's a reinstituted requirement because it used to exist a number of decades ago, but there's an annual certification that you're still using your land. And if you have buildings enrolled for active agricultural purposes. And so those are the routine requirements. You can come out of enrollment for a number of criteria. For example, if you cut contrary to your forest management plan, or if you had water quality violations that the Agency of Agriculture, Food and Markets identified and you went through a process that verified those, then your land may be considered developed and your parcel would come out of the program for, in essence, non-compliance.
Well, there's been a little bit of a hiccup this year with that sort of, you call it newly reinstituted, but I think it was 2015 that the law changed requiring farmers to fill out annual forms that say, yes, I'm still actively farming, or, you know, basically, yes, I still want to be in current use. And for a couple of years, my understanding from the reporting from VT Digger was that this was something that was a little bit of like a grace period for farmers for a couple of years. And then this year, if they didn't fill out the form, they were sort of kicked out of the program, and up to 90 farmers were, and some of them now are going to have to pay a pretty hefty tax bill. Is that correct?
Yeah. So let me just add some clarifying around that. So there used to be, under that WIFTAP program that I mentioned initially, there used to be an annual ag certification requirement. And so that's where that requirement was. But that hasn't been around for quite a few years. And you're correct. The new requirement came in 2015. We've sent out notices where and it's not just a farmer. It could be a landowner. It could be someone whose land is in active agricultural use, but they may work somewhere that has nothing to do with farming. So it's important to recognize you can be enrolled in the active agricultural land program and not be what we would think of as a farmer in any sense. I could have land. I don't, but I could have land enrolled in the active agricultural program as a state employee.
And so what? It would be like somebody's haying on your land? Or
somebody's haying on your land, or maybe you have animals pastured on your land. You could be growing Christmas trees is an agricultural use. So we sent out forms last summer, or September, if you think of September as summer, to over 7,000 landowners requesting that they complete the form. It had been pre-filled out for them, and then they were required to submit it by November 1st. Around 1,000 people did not submit that form, so then we did a follow-up mailing in the late winter, early spring, and asked them to submit it. Again, as a courtesy, we extended that deadline. And then for the ones that did not submit it, we began the process to discontinue their agricultural enrollment from the program. Now, if they had forest land enrolled in the program, that continued to be enrolled because they didn't have an eligibility issue with their forest land. And we had total compliance was around 97%. So there were some people that came out of the program. We think some of those people that came out of the program, they may not have been eligible to continue their enrollment. They chose not to submit the form.
But not all of them. I mean, when you say some, it suggests. And so, you know, there's been some questions about whether some of the people who will now find themselves with a hefty tax bill could have been given more information, should have known, given that the requirements are a few years old and they've been getting notices about that. What do you think?
Well, I think, you know, we did our very best at the tax department to reach out to people. We also worked with the Agency of Ag to get information out. I know the Vermont Farm Bureau also reached out to their members to help remind those people who were members of the Farm Bureau. And we really did our best. There's a similar component where, you know, for forest land that they have to update their forest management plan every 10 years. The legislature chose to create this annual requirement for ag certification. And so we're fulfilling the will of the legislature that people need to tell us that certify under oath that they're still using their lands for active agricultural purposes.
And is that just because the legislature felt like people might be able to sort of skirt the requirements for a few years? I mean, is this just saying you need to, in good faith, tell us that your land is still being used for these purposes?
Well, I wouldn't want to speak for the legislature, but I think their thinking was, and I know the VT Digger article had some information from one of the legislators who worked on this. And, you know, they were thinking that, you know, there's not an annual inspection program or even a 10-year inspection program on agricultural land like there are on forest lands. And a self-certification program is probably a good place to start with trying to get the agricultural land into more honesty about how people are using their land and making sure they are still using it for active agricultural purposes. And I think, you know, there's some conversations around whether an annual certification is appropriate. Agricultural crops tend to be an annual crop, whereas for forest land, it's a 10-year rotation on updating your forest management plan, and forest land is a longer-term crop.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're getting a handle on the state's current use program. It's designed to help keep Vermont's rural character and working landscape intact. But we've discovered in other shows that there are some misconceptions, sometimes misunderstandings about how the program works. So we're going over current use today. We're talking with the current use program chief, Elizabeth Hunt, and with Forest Parks and Recreation Commissioner Michael Snyder. And let's go to the calls. Tony's calling in from Plainfield. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm sorry, I had to call in, and I don't mean to sound cynical, but my experience with current use, and I raise beef cows, is entirely absolutely negative. And I feel that the 99% of people that are not farmers in Vermont that are listening to this show not get the false assumption that the current use program is a friend to farmers, because it's not.
So explain why, Tony. What is not good for you?
I'm sorry. Okay. This is about control. This is about, and I've met with Ms. Hunt in her office. I know Ms. Hunt. This is an ill-willed group of people who are not farmers and do not care about farmers and do not care about doing the right thing for the land. What they care about is control, and they're... I'm not as articulate as I wish I was.
No, but Tony, let me ask you a pointed question to try to get at one of the other points here about current use that maybe you can help with, since you're a farmer and you've looked at this. So one of the things about current use is that it's designed to lower the tax burden on landowners who might otherwise be paying a lot more in taxes if it was taxed at the regular property rate that homesteads are. So the benefits of the program of having a much lower tax burden do not outweigh what you say are the controlling factors from the state?
No, that's nonsense. Because what happens is that the state says, here's what you are to do with your land. And when they say that, that reduces your ability to make money on your land by orders of magnitude more than the slight tax benefit that you get from being enrolled in current use. It's a gimmick. It's a gimmick. But the gimmick is political. It's so that the 99% of Vermonters who are not farmers vote for the people who do this. The farmers know that this is a gimmick. We lose money because we can't use our land the way we want to. And then people like Elizabeth Hunt say, well, we're helping farmers, and so their political patrons get reelected.
Well, Tony, let me put that to Elizabeth Hunt. I really appreciate you calling in and sharing your perspective. So what about Tony's claim that this is controlling and that the state is actually then dictating what people are allowed to do with their land?
Well, and I think you had touched on it a little bit, but current use is a voluntary program, so people can choose whether or not they want to be in the program for forest land, if they want to develop a forest management plan or not. For agricultural land, if Tony didn't want to be in the program, or someone else for that matter, then they don't need to enroll in the program. It's not a requirement for agricultural land or forest land to be in the program. And so it's really someone's choice as to whether or not they want to deal with the state. And there are some requirements around receiving the substantial tax benefits that come with the program.
So there is some sense of control that the state, if not dictates, does require you to fulfill certain obligations in order to be enrolled.
Yes, and you have to meet the criteria to be enrolled also. You do have to be enrolled and you have to apply, and the state places a lien on your land as part of a condition of enrolling in the program. Recognizing that that all comes with those things, it is a voluntary program. So we have people in the agricultural and the forest land who could be eligible for enrollment who choose not to have the state involved in their property management. And that's a choice that we allow people to have. We don't put those restrictions on everyone who has land in Vermont.
So Tony characterized it as a slight tax benefit. It looks a lot more than slight to me.
Well, with use value, it really depends upon both what your land is valued at, because the use value is set at a statewide level. And so how it works is it's a little complicated to explain, but for example, the use value for forest land is $136 an acre this year. And for agricultural land, it's $347 an acre. So that's the amount per acre that you're taxed at. So if you have land in a very town that has high land values, and I'll just pick on Manchester in southern Vermont today. So a Manchester land value is going to be rather high. If you have land in the Northeast Kingdom, we know property values there are much lower. And so your overall benefit is going to be lower if the tax rates were the same for both of those towns. And they're not. So that's another component of that equation, is both what is my land assessed at by the town, and then minus out the difference between that use value, and then you apply your tax rate. And so people do see varying benefits between what current use provides them. And we have some properties where that use value is very close to the town's assessed value, and they wouldn't receive as much benefits. But most of from a land perspective, most of the estimates are somewhere between 60 and 80% savings on the taxes on your land. You have to remember to subtract out that 2 acres around your house and any dwelling that's not enrolled in the program when you're looking at those. But it is substantial for most people.
I want to talk a little bit about this question of tax revenues and then how it affects both municipal and state finances. But we've got some other perspectives coming in as well. Liz is on the line with us from Ferrisburg. Hi, Liz. What's your experience?
Hi, Jane. Actually, I have even a better answer for the last caller. We have 200 acres. 100 acres is in current use as forest management, and we are able to sell the wood that is taken off that and keep that in forest. And then we have almost 100 acres in farm. And how it advantages the farmer, I have 2 horses, and I say to this farmer, you can plant whatever you want on this 200 acres. So he has access to our acreage, but he doesn't have to own it or pay the tax on it. And he can plant corn, he can plant hay, he can plant cover crop, as long as when I need hay for my horses, he comes and he delivers our hay. So I think that I realize that that man probably has quite a bit more land and is having who's not happy with current use. We are very happy with current use because the land, the farmland that we have is very visible from Route 7 and from Moncton Road. So it's kept open and is beautiful meadow or cornfields. So I feel it's a benefit to people, to farmers, if they have an arrangement with somebody like us. Do what you want on the land, and you don't have to own it or pay tax on it.
Liz, thanks for sharing your experience. I appreciate hearing different views here as we have this conversation. Commissioner Snyder, a couple questions for you that are similar, so I'm going to pair them together. Jenny in Randolph says, can forestry land be managed to maximize wildlife benefits? I have a parcel that is 24 acres of forest and 14 acres of hayfield. Am I allowed to get into the current use program? And Mike in Rupert says, I have 30 acres that I'd like to put in current use. About 15 is forest and 15 is meadow we use for honeybees. Can this be entered into current use, or do I need 25 acres of forest and or 25 acres of agricultural land, or as I have it, can it be mixed between the two? So similar questions, although different uses. Commissioner Snyder?
Sure. I think I can keep up there. I think the answer is yes to the first one.
24 acres of forest, 14 acres of hayfield.
Right. You need 25 acres of contiguous forest. Actually, you can get away with a parcel that's 25 or larger, but with a minimum of 20 acres of forest and other eligible lands, open land, idle ag land, or ag land. So I think in the first instance, your listener that is eligible. The second one with this, was it 15 and 15?
Yeah, 15 forest, 15 meadow that's used for honeybees.
They might make it in. I'll defer to Elizabeth under agriculture, but it would not qualify, unfortunately, for forest land eligibility.
Ah, so it can't be a mixed 25-acre parcel. Elizabeth, what do you think?
Yeah, and you're right. It can't be a mixed 25-acre parcel, and some people sort of wonder about that, and that's because the requirements are so different. And so you have to have that forest management plan to manage your forest, and then the requirements for the ag land are different under the ag certification. With the honeybees, I've occasionally seen those. That's one of those interesting questions you get. And we have allowed those to be enrolled as agricultural land, but the land has to be managed for honeybees. So there has to be some type of – you're not just having the hive sit there, that you're managing the meadow for flower production so that the honeybees are getting the nectar they need.
Hmm. Steve wrote in to say, I've been concerned about the one half of income by farming requirement for ag land. Many farmers now have outside sources of income, or their spouse works outside the farm. This disqualifies them from current use when they're really farming the land. So, and clarify again, Elizabeth, because you're talking about depending on the size of the parcel we're talking about, that income requirement of 50% of your income through farming applies only in certain cases.
Right. So when the legislature created the statute around current use, they created some very unique criteria that provide extra benefit for those people who are earning 50% of their gross income from farming, and that's to enroll those smaller agricultural parcels that a regular person would not be able to do, or to lease to one of those people. Otherwise, you have to have the 25 acres. Again, if you're more than 25 acres in active agricultural use, we're not looking at the income requirements. And then I think I also forgot to mention that if you are a qualified farmer, if the landowner is a qualified farmer, or if it's leased to a qualified farmer, the farm buildings that are in active agricultural use can be enrolled in the program.
And I believe dwellings that are basically offered up for farm workers that sort of they can live in for free can also be eligible, right?
Right. That's considered a farm building. So someone that has a dwelling or a house or a mobile home that is provided to farm employees as a benefit of farm employment and they're not charging rent on those on that dwelling can be enrolled in the current use program. And in that case with farm buildings, and again, this is where we really look to that income requirement, those buildings, the landowner would pay no property taxes on those.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're talking about current use. It's a program that's been around in Vermont for about 40 years. I think it was actually sort of came into being in 1978, but the first parcels of land weren't enrolled until about 1980. So it's almost 40 years old in practice, and we're learning how it works, how much land is enrolled in Vermont, and what uses that land has applied to it, and then how it all works. You know, how do you get enrolled in current use? What do you have to do to stay in current use? And we haven't talked much yet about the tax implications, but we're getting to that as well. And we're talking today with Michael Snyder, who's Commissioner of the Department of Forests, Parks, and Recreation, and Elizabeth Hunt, who's Current Use Program Chief. That's in the Tax Department. Let's get another experience in here from Chris in Middlebury. Hi, Chris. Go right ahead.
Hello, Jane. Thanks for the show. Yes, my wife and I have 100 acres, or over 100 acres, in ag and over 50 acres in forest, and we wouldn't have that if we wouldn't have kept it if it hadn't been current use.
You wouldn't have kept it if you hadn't been in current use. Sorry, your phone's a little bit wonky, Chris, but you wouldn't have been able to keep it if you couldn't enroll it in current use. Because why? It would just the tax burden would have been too high, or the nice dollar figures if you could parcel it up and sell it would have looked too appealing.
The taxes would have been way too high for us to afford, and yes, the appeal to sell it off for development would have been just too great.
Well, Chris, I appreciate hearing your thoughts and why current use is working for you. And Elizabeth Hunt, let's talk about so this is appealing, and that the whole reason for creating the program was to slow down and in development in the state, to help preserve Vermont's working landscape, and to allow landowners who had their land being used for agricultural purposes or forestry purposes to be able to maintain that without paying for the sort of property value of the land as if it were broken up into housing parcels or as if that was the same kind of use. But this means, doesn't it, that that landscape not being taxed at the same rate that a homestead is, there's less revenue coming into towns because they're not getting that actual property value that a homestead would, but the state sort of makes up that difference, right?
Right, the payment that we make to the towns is called the Hold Harmless Payment. And so what we do is every year after we close out the current use books at the end of the year, then that following fall, we make a payment to the towns called the Hold Harmless Payment that makes them whole for the municipal taxes that they lost because of the current use enrollments in their town for that prior year.
Right. So essentially, a town would be getting the same amount that they would if no land was enrolled in current use.
That's correct. And so those have been going on since the beginning of the program. And so the towns receive that payment, and in essence, they're made whole from the enrollment of the current use program. Now, the other portion of the taxes is the education tax that's not made because of current use enrollments. And so for the education tax that is lost, we consider that the term they use is foregone revenue, which means the state just doesn't have that money. It's not collected. And obviously, the state wouldn't make a payment to itself. And so that's why it's considered foregone revenue.
So when you talk about the state making up the difference for municipalities, so mm-hmm. it's good that individual towns, you're looking at that, you know, hold harmless, and that the town can still have enough to function even if a large portion of its land is enrolled in current use. But isn't it then the taxpayers who are essentially all together making up that lost revenue from current use?
Right. And that's one of those misconceptions that a lot of people have is some people in the towns, and we get these calls every year, are like, well, I'm paying for the current use in my town, so I don't want this parcel enrolled in the current use program. And it's not a, you know, the town isn't making themselves whole. It's all of us in Vermont that are supporting this program and keeping our working landscapes active.
So we all are paying for it. I mean, if you work that out, everybody in Vermont might have a slightly higher tax burden because there's land enrolled in current use. But you see that as a net benefit to the state.
Absolutely. You know, when you think about what we value as Vermonters and what we want our landscapes to look like and what we want to see when we're driving down the interstate or when we're driving down the dirt road, those are important things that Vermonters value. And that's why this program is still around, even though, you know, it's not inexpensive. It does come with a cost. But when you look at those aesthetic benefits that we have and the benefits of having a working landscape. And Commissioner Snyder can talk about the value that the forest products industry brings to Vermont. Those are things that you don't necessarily think about, but they really contribute to the Vermont way of life.
Well, and Commissioner Snyder, let me put another listener comment to you as you contemplate that question. And this is from Scott in Pomfret, who says, the governor has staked his governorship on making Vermont more affordable. To that end, has the administration taken action to determine to what extent the current use program makes land more scarce and expensive for the kind of development we want, like affordable housing?
Well, I think Elizabeth makes great points about, first of all, just to back up and say it's totally fair in my view to consider the costs of any program or any policy decision, and this is a big one, but it's also only fair to consider those benefits. And Elizabeth did a nice job of beginning that, an assessment of what are the benefits that come with this, including significant economic benefits of farm and forest economies locally and keeping people working. I mean, we're about to hit fall foliage. 3.5 million people come here to look at our trees every year, the leaves. And we owe a lot to the landowners. Majority of this landscape is forested. The majority of that is privately owned by family owners. Providing a mechanism for folks to keep forest, current use plays a big role in that, is really important, and the benefits go on and on from there. As difficult as cleaning up the waters of the state may prove to be with respect to phosphorus loading, it would be nigh on impossible without healthy forested hillsides, and that's a part of what current use is doing for us. With regard to prices and availability, I don't know. Full disclosure, I own forest land. It's enrolled in the program. I think it allowed me at that stage in my life to access the land. I'm not sure I understand the point that it's pricing people out. It's actually making ownership possible because the land holding costs are so significantly reduced.
Well, I guess if you could say, you know, that there are communities where there's not a lot of affordable housing and there may be a lot of agricultural land that's held by a few landowners. And if you had if there wasn't current use and so there wasn't that incentive to keep that land in a working landscape, it might actually be parceled out for housing. And with more housing costs might come down and be more affordable because obviously affordable housing is a huge issue in Vermont.
Absolutely. And we support that and care about it. I think like any land use decision, it's about where and how much. And I'm big on options. I think this keeps our options alive. I think Elizabeth may have a better handle on the prices, et cetera, and how that works.
Well, and I think some of what comes into play is remember that current use isn't a forever program. The land can come out of the program by paying the land use change tax, and if somebody wants to develop it, they can do that. And then, you know, some people choose to live in the cities instead of on a 5-acre parcel or a 10-acre parcel, which is sometimes what the current use land gets split up into. So I think, you know, it's all about balance, and current use has always been looked at the legislature. There's always something going on as to sort of trying to figure out how to make it better, and that's one of those conversations that's important to have.
You talked about taking the land out of current use, and I want to make sure we touch on that as well, and we have a couple of questions and comments about that. Glenn writes, parcels benefiting from this program should never be allowed to subdivide for residential use. I have a neighbor that used this tax shelter for decades, letting his money make more invested elsewhere instead of paying the taxes proper as his neighbors were. They only had to pay a small penalty for then taking it out of the program and subdividing it into a medium residential gentrified neighborhood because he could now afford the engineering and fees associated with building it out for maximum municipal taxing gains in what were forested lands in current use, including black bear and significant wildlife habitat. And Bill in Manchester says when a landowner takes advantage of current use and then pulls out and sells for the highest and best use, usually for some form of development, how do the taxpayers get reimbursed for the subsidy that has allowed the landowner to pay less taxes than they ordinarily should have? In other words, what is the penalty, if any? Does it cover the subsidy, say, over 10 or 15 years?
Yeah, so how the legislature changed how that tax, it's called the land use change tax, is calculated in 2015 to it has become a more significant penalty, a more significant tax. So it used to be that the land use change tax was based upon the assessed value of the land, and then it was just prorated. Now, how it's done is we work with the town listers or the local assessing officials to determine the value of the land that's coming out as if it were a separate parcel. So if you're taking 5 acres out of the program, we ask the town listers or the local assessing official to determine the value of that 5 acres as if it were a separate parcel in the town, and then the tax is 10% of that value. So it's not tied directly to the benefits that have been received, but it is tied to what's the value of the land coming out in today's market, as it were, at the town's assessed value.
Is it in some ways a tax shelter? I mean, is that just one of the sort of downsides, I guess, in some people's perspective of the program, though?
Well, I think it's one of the viewpoints. You know, some people call it a tax shelter. Some people call it a contract. It's a benefit program in that it provides a benefit to all of Vermonters.
We got a question from Eric in the Northeast Kingdom who just says he thinks it's a bad idea that you can post land that's in current use. And when we've done shows on hunting, we know that more and more land is posted against hunting. So, Michael Snyder, what about this question of whether current use land should be allowed to be posted against hunters?
Yep, it comes up a lot. We've heard it. And just to begin, to be clear, the right to control access to one's land remains with the landowner regardless of enrollment. So there's that's just to clarify, some folks have a misconception that, oh, you can't post if you're in current use. For better or worse, you can. And we have great interest with our colleagues at Fish and Wildlife and in the department, and we want to see people accessing land. We love that landowners would share their land. But we also respect that people have reason to maintain privacy and security. And so for now, you can be in current use and still post your land. Some do, some don't. And that's where it stands now. And we do hear this from time to time. Boy, shouldn't you eliminate that possibility? And maybe it comes up, and I think it's a fair question. And given our interest in wanting people to share the land, I think when landowners are comfortable that folks will also share the responsibility, then they make the land available.
Michael Snyder is Commissioner of the Department of Forests, Parks, and Recreation. Elizabeth Hunt is Current Use Program Chief. That's in the Department of Taxes. Thank you both very much for explaining current use to us today. I appreciate you being around and sticking around for an even longer discussion. Thanks.
Thanks, Jane.
Happy to do it.